Blog Talk Radio.
Boy, I would just love someday to have that accent down properly. Blog Talk.
Sometimes you meet somebody.
There it is.
Close your mind.
Another episode of Back to the Gym Shack with Tom Hayes and Rudy Garino.
Sometimes you meet somebody.
But let's listen. Let's listen to the song. Oh, there he is.
Has anybody seen my lady?
Well, that's the end of this song. We gotta get the other one going. Rudy has his preference.
She had a sad little walk in.
He does not look
the baddest thing alive. The woman set me free, y'all.
Others are crazy little shacks.
Rudy, we got to start it right. How are you?
There it is, that beep, pop, 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 Sugar Shack.
Jimmy, that's the one. Jimmy Gilmer.
Jimmy what?
Yeah.
What's his last name?
How are you today?
Good, good. What are we doing? Anything special? Oh, you got to continue your book.
Yes, I am. We're coming in. We're doing the. That's right. We're gonna. I didn't get a lot of opportunity to plan today to do what I really wanted to do, but that's okay because we've got some stuff. In fact, I think there may have been some things I didn't do last week. But boy, we've had a lot of lessons again this week. Thinking that things were going to go a certain way, we want to give as Billy Porter would say, a shout out to George Wilson, who has been so involved and always will be in the first part of what we have so far with the documentary. And George, for personal reasons, has decided to leave. For the time being, I know he'll be back, but we have a new gentleman on board, Rick Dumont, who he and I are both going to direct the project going forward. A great guy with great credentials, great attitude, loves, and is so appreciative that he's involved now. So we had a transition of power. I related it to you, Rudy, that took it was miraculous. Within a half an hour, everything changed, and everybody walked away happy and really feeling good about everything. So that's the first thing we want to talk about.
That's funny when it looks like a disaster turns out to be all right.
Nothing's going to stop this one, Rudy. Nothing's going to stop this one. Yeah, I mean, just think of. I mean, we really didn't even stop to talk about that, but just think of, George, with all the great and most sweet of intentions, just wasn't able to continue, and, with other commitments he has, and he had enough integrity to own up to that and say he couldn't do the project justice right now. He certainly has the talent to do an amazing job, but he just can't put the time commitment in, and then in the door, a half an hour later, the next guy picks up the baton. And the race continues.
I'm sad to hear that George is gone, but it's a funny thing the way it happens, you know?
Well, it's just another testament to how amazing this project is. You know, I sat here. This new guy, Rick, he's kind of we got to get him. I didn't even think to do this. I might even try to get him on the phone in the show and welcome him aboard and have you speak to him directly. But, I tried to put this in perspective to him, and we're sitting here in my house, and I said, try to imagine this. I said, there's this amazing club, and he gets the whole concept because he referred to CBGB, which is the club that existed in the Bowery that the club that spawned the Sex Pistols and all of that punk rock and had stars like Blondie, etc. He had actually been in the club, and I told him, I said, well, I said, that's interesting. I said, now take that experience and multiply it by 1,000, and you might just begin to get close to what happened at the Sugar Shack. And we talked about the fact that Studio 54 is doing a documentary this year, and I told him Studio 54 has nothing on the experience of the Sugar Shack because they didn't have any live acts. It wasn't about the musicians. It was about the people who went there. And I said, imagine that this amazing club existed over 50 years ago, and 50 years later, it has fallen into our hands to document this and tell this amazing story. Out of the billions of people on the planet, it has come to us. And it's a big responsibility, and it's an amazing story that's going to, when people see this thing, they're going to be transformed. If they didn't hear about the Shack, they're going to just be blown away by what happened there. And, of course, the people who were there are going to be overjoyed knowing that the story is told and that it will be preserved forever. So yeah, he got it. He looked at me and goes, yeah, he says, it's all pretty damn amazing, isn't it? You know, and the way that I got him, Rudy, was the day that I had Peaches and Herb scheduled, you know, I spoke to George and, you know, he had just had something happen. And I said to him, you know, George, if you know, not emotionally ready to do this today, you know, I said, if you physically, you know, whatever, I said, you should be careful and not, you know, jeopardize yourself in any way. I said, I understand. I says, I can try to get somebody else. So at 12:30 with an appointment at 4:00, I had nobody. And I tried everything to go to Gig Salad, Gig Masters, Craigslist, online, trying to find a videographer, could find nobody, and called a buddy of mine who has a cable show and wanted to know if he knew a cameraman. And Rick was on his way out the door. He said, if you got me 2 minutes later, he said, called me 2 minutes later, I would have been long gone. And instead, he picked up the phone, called me, and at 4:00, right on the dot, when I was scheduled to interview Peaches and Herb, he walked in and did the most professional of shoots, just fabulous, a great guy. And then he, of course, did the one with Jerry Maffeo, and he's a pro. He's a true pro. He's got big passion for music and especially soul music. So, yeah, we had a shift of power, and it was seamless. Nobody got hurt.
And that's the beauty part of it. Nobody got hurt. That's the beauty part of it.
Yeah, and George was, you know, I had a couple of friends who I really had a falling out with when they challenged me about possession of the films. Because all along, Rudy, there's been incredible trust here on all parts. Everybody trusts one another, and I got pretty upset that my friend intimated that, you know, that at some point I would have trouble getting the footage that we've already done. And one of the first words out of George's mouth was, I'll be sending you a hard drive with all of the film content on it. No questions asked. He didn't talk about compensation. He didn't talk about licensing. He didn't talk about credits. Everybody has come at this, Rudy, with their hearts. And that's the beauty of this whole thing. So we have a guy who has more time and more focus than George recently does, because that's the way it is in his life. So we got a guy who can give us the attention we need right now. It's a beautiful thing.
That is beautiful, because that's what you need.
Imagine, Rudy, that if I got that phone call from George, and then you and I were having this conversation, and we're trying to figure out, what do we do now?
Yeah. That's true.
That never happened. And a half an hour later, a guy walked through my door saying, "Oh, okay, let's go to work." And last night, I sent them an outline of what we've done to date and the storyboard and where we're going to go, and you know, told them one of the things that I outlined was in the next few weeks we want to get together with Peter Wolf, who was the lead singer for the Jay Giles Band, with Jerry. We got to take more footage of Jerry. We want to get to Robert Lovelace and his crew. I told him we want to track down Chandra and get her. We got a Kool & the Gang and a Bootsy Collins date coming up in Foxwoods. I want to get together with Woody from the Fabulous Lords and do that. So we're going to be busy, Rudy. This is the kind of stuff that's been on hold, but we're going to really start to clean up all of the local stuff we can, and then hopefully get that Kool & the Gang shot in and whatever other acts we can to, you know, hopefully wrap this up by the end of the year. And of course, you know, he knew that Jay Leno was in the mix, and he was just saying, "Oh, boy." And I said, "Well," and I said, "George is going to be the one to go out on that one." And he goes, "Oh, what I wouldn't give to go along and film Jay Leno," and he said, "to be part of it." Well, now he is. So you can imagine his excitement over this thing.
That's unbelievable. It just goes to show the Sugar Shack ain't dead yet.
Well, the Sugar Shack, when I explained to people how it all happened, you know, I was explaining to him your history, your chronology. Here you were a successful businessman. And all of a sudden you go see the Al Jolson. You know, I've written a novel this winter on my own property, the Beantown, my little beans. And, you know, and so what I had to do is I had to read a lot about how do you craft a story. And one of the main elements of a story called a hero's journey is the fact that the hero gets a call, and not necessarily a telephone call, but maybe a spiritual call, a call on the inside. And I said Rudy's call to action was the Al Jolson story. He saw that story, I don't know how many times, and said, "I got to get into show business." And along comes, go ahead.
In Boston, they had theaters all over the city, you know. And when the show played, when the movie played the top theaters, then it went to the other theaters all over town, all over the.
Oh yeah, I remember that. Yes.
Yeah. So I followed it and I saw it 17 times. That's how much.
Well, I'm going to watch that tonight. In fact, we're going to, you know, try to get clip some footage from that and show that, because that was such a significant wake-up call to you that you wanted to be in show business. And then, of course, Jerry Vale came along.
Well, no, Jerry Vale was always there, but I never wanted to get involved. But my friend used to say, "Come on, we're throwing a party. We got Jerry Vale there," and then he was very friendly with him, you know. And I says, "I'm a gambler. What am I want to get involved with a singer? I got nothing in common, you know." And then when the Jolson story came out, and they had to drag me to see it, because in those days I wanted to see gangsters and westerns. That was the real turnaround in my life. Then I knew where I wanted to go music.
You know, that's an incredible part of this story. Is, you know, my thing, Rudy, is that I never wanted to be a comedian, and I never thought that I would be able to be involved in filming anything on the Sugar Shack. I just had no I wasn't a filmmaker. I had no experience as a filmmaker, really no desire to go that route. And it just comes to you. I mean, those are the things people can't explain. How do these things come to you. You know, I'm the guy, like I said to Rick, I said, of all the billions of people who know that this is such a great project and is going to be a certainly, if we don't get an Oscar, we're going to get nominated. And, you know, I believe we will get that Oscar. How many people get this to actually just come to them the way that the Al Jolson story did, and then a way that soul music came to you through that visit to the barn and Wayne Cochran?
Yeah. Well, that's what it is. Certain things, like, they just pop up out of nowhere, and they seem to work themselves out.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, everything that's, you know, I explained to him that trip out to Vegas, you know, and we were going to shoot, excuse me, talk about another event that was supposed to happen. You did not want to go to that bar to do that shoot. And you walked in and you saw those lights and you saw the setting. And then in that very same shoot, you get on the phone with Duke. And how many years it had been since you had talked to him of the Four
Duke
Tops?
Fink. Yeah, from the Four Tops. That was amazing. That fellow Don calls without me. He never mentioned to me he was going to call the Four Tops. And then all of a sudden, he wanted to find out if I was for real. You know, because I never met the guy other than that day there. And he says, hey, I just called Duke Faker from the Four Tops, and he wants to know where you are. He wants to speak to you. He got carried away. So I put two and two together. I thought maybe he was trying to figure out if I was for real.
Yeah.
And Duke made me out for real.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's just one of the countless miracles. I call them miracles because I believe them. What about, you know, as I was putting this together to bring Rick up today, what about the fact that the one that still shakes George and I is that we were able to reach Sugar Shack Lil after 40 years of the closing of the Sugar Shack. And we go down to New Bedford, and we have this beautiful meeting, so emotional. And she's saying everything that we're talking about, right? She says, I can't believe it. These two gentlemen showed up at my door, and they're going to film me, and I'm going to get a chance. And she's on the phone with you, and she gets to say her goodbyes, and she tells you how much she loves you in the film and what you meant to her and what you did for everybody. I mean, George and I had tears running down our faces when we were filming her. It was such an emotional moment. And poor Lil had no idea that she was even sick. And what, 2 weeks later, poor thing, she died of cancer. And if we weren't there that day, so close to the end of her life, we wouldn't have this beautiful footage. I mean, I told this guy, Rick Dumont, that we, in this film, we are going to bring people from tears to belly laughs and up and down. I mean, this is what a great film does. It goes up and down emotionally. And that's what people are going to witness in this thing. With, I mean, contrast that with the great, with the George Clinton story and the Funkadelics, which will have everybody on out of their seats on the floor laughing.
Yeah, Judge really did a good job, Judge.
This, Rudy, this is an epic, epic story. This is, I just
Judge,
sit back, you know, and everybody gets uptight. Well, even this week, I was talking to Susanna, and, you know, we had an individual that was interested in talking about money, but things didn't seem to be moving. It seemed to get a little, we had a little bit of tension over that. And then all of a sudden, she calls me that night, and she says that Sherry now think of this, Rudy. Your daughter, Rudy Garino's daughter, is hanging out with Barry Gordy's daughter. They talk on the phone, and this Friday night, she's going to go hang out with Sherry Gordy at her review and see Jackie Wilson's kid, Bobby Wilson.
Jackie Wilson's kid.
Yeah, and I said to her, Susanna, in your life, would you have imagined being having this part that you're interviewing. She's done these beautiful. She interviewed Duke. She interviewed some of the band members of the OJs, et cetera. She did a great job out there. Now she's going to go and hang out with Jackie Wilson's kid and Barry Gordy's daughter. This is the kind of stuff that you don't plan, Rudy.
Yeah. Do you know Jackie Wilson? I says, yeah. And she wants me to, Barry Gordy, what's her name? Sherry Gordy wants me to go. I says, tell Jackie's kid that his father used to keep me up all night, and one night they stole my car. There was a parking lot in back of the Sugar Shack. At the end of the alley there, it was like a parking lot that goes out onto Tremont. Stewart Street.
Stewart and Tremont. Yeah, I know the parking lot. It was right across from Nick's.
I used to park my car in there, and they had a door going into the alley and into my club. But one morning when everybody left, my car was gone.
It was one of those Cadillacs?
Yeah, like a brand new Cadillac. In fact, I just came up from Florida to be with Jackie, you know, because his friend used to call me and tell me, Rudy, make sure you take care of Johnny. Jackie.
Wow, that's interesting.
His name was Johnny. I don't want to mention his last name. I says, you got it, John. And you know something? Those guys did me a big favor. That's by me helping Jackie, not helping him, I'm assuring them that nothing was going to happen to him. I ended up with Al Green. I ended up with Al Green. See how one story leads to another story.
Right. Well, I told...
I remember the agent. Are you crazy, Al Green? He's a superstar already. I says, I know he is. I says, well, why can't I have him? He says, he's too big. He's too big. He's getting a lot of money. Boom, 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 boom. So, okay. And I happened to call Johnny, and we were talking. I says, hey, you guys got a line on Al Green? He says, yeah, why, you want him? I says, yeah, what day do you want? I says, I'll take any date.
Right.
He called.
Amazing.
He called me. He says, he gave me a date. He says, it's $20,000, all right. I says, you got it. And that's how it happened. And then I called the agent. He says, pencil in the date, whatever the date it was. I says, and guess who? Al Green. He says, what are you kidding me? I says, no, I'm not kidding you. I said, check it out. Block that date out, and we have Al Green. He called me back. He said, How'd you do it? I said, that's a secret.
Yeah, well, the miracles continue, Rudy. This is, and every time, people get a little uptight. I said, just relax. I said, this is big. This is a big boat, and it ain't stopping. It doesn't stop on a dime. It just keeps going.
Yeah. And we had that same remark from an agency that used to handle Jerry Vail. And I told him, we got Jerry Vail. He says, you got nobody. Well, what do you mean you got Jerry Vail? I says, Jerry committed. He's coming in. He says, I know Jerry. He don't commit to nothing. All that. So he called me back. He says, I guess you're right, and I'm wrong. I said, before you open your mouth, you should check out the story.
Great stuff.
It shocked the agents because they were so surprised that somebody went over their head, and it was unbelievable. I guess nobody ever did that who went over their heads I didn't go over their head accidentally because I'm friendly with these guys, with these people. I don't mean to say I went over their head. But,
you just went around them, that's all. If they're going to block the door, we'll just walk around to the other side. You know, I mean, you know, I was telling, of course, I'm trying to bring Rick up what I call the gestalt of the Sugar Shack documentary and all of the weird, crazy events that happened by themselves. And I said, you know, we were in the Wang Theater with four security guards, with their arms extended, blocking the stage door, fighting with us, that we were not going to go back there, that we were not allowed to film anything in the Wang Theater because it was a union house, that we didn't have clearance, blah, blah, blah. And that door opened up behind him. And I forget his name, a sweetheart of a guy, the roadie, the road manager for the OJs, looked at this scene. There was George and I and four security guards. And he goes, what's the problem here? They said, these guys can't go back there. He said, let them in. They were furious. And then even he said to us, how long is this going to take? I said, just 5 minutes. Just give us 5 minutes. He says, well, he said, they've got to do a meet and greet. He says, I want this over with quick. We said, yeah, we'll be real quick. We'll be real quick. Eddie and Walter Williams walked in, sat down, and hung out like it was their own living room. Half an hour later. So anyway, it's a great, great journey, and this is going to get very exciting in the next few weeks. We got, and you know, we have the mystery guest who we certainly can't talk about. That's going to add a lot to this. When you called me and told me that he had called you after so many years, and you said, you know, his nickname, I thought you were talking about the Iceman, Jerry Butler. But you used a different term. Then you straightened it out for me. But yeah, but we're gonna contact Jerry and set that up as well. So fascinating.
The nickname was fine.
Not the Iceman, it was the other thing.
Yeah. Hitman.
Yeah. Hitman. You said it, I didn't. So we're going to pursue that as well. Yeah.
Jerry,
Rudy, this
say
is...
Smiley. Yeah. He used to call the back, used to call the office. Smiley's here.
Smiley.
Yeah. If anything, fellas, at least we're having a lot of laughs, and we're reliving a memory that'll never go away.
That's right. And you know, I said to Rick the other day. I said, Rick, you know, I said, and I told Susanna this, and I think I might have even mentioned this to you. You know, we could stop right now. If you want to stop right now, we'll have a good film right now. We've got enough footage.
No.
We've got about 8 hours of footage to have a good film. But
no, we
just relax.
We want to relax.
We want an Oscar.
A couple more big ones.
That's right. We're going to get the big ones. The story continues. It gets wilder and crazier. I mean, Rudy, here it was just about a month ago. You were on Jay Harvey had called in the week before. And again, I was ready to close out the show, and I yelled and screamed. I said, wait, we have a caller, and it was Jay Harvey. And we had a great talk with Jay Harvey. And so all of a sudden, out of the blue, he mentioned hanging around in Boston in the early days with Jay Leno because they were both comedians. He didn't say anything about Jay Leno being at the Sugar Shack, nothing. He mentioned that they did a few talent shows together. And then, so it was great to have that conversation with him. And Jay, of course, has all his anecdotes about the club. Well, the following week, you had signed off. Oh, by the way, we want to give a shout out to Billy Porter. He just sent me a text saying He's actually listening right now. I don't know why he's not calling. He's a very important man these days. And, in fact, he likes to sort of give me in the text. Yeah, he likes the quote, you've got a great future behind you.
Oh, yeah.
And,
right.
he's a very important guy. You know, we used to be able to get him at the beginning of the show, but now that he's got a few movies that he's in, you know, he's like all those celebrities. He can only talk to us when, you know, he has the time from his busy schedule. But you had signed off. Billy had signed off. And I was, it was the day that we were about to interview Peaches and Herb, and I heard Shake Your Mean Thing, or Shake Your, I forget the exact title. And I was listening to a riff in there, and I said, wait a minute. I said, that sounds like Michael Jackson. That sounds like Thriller. And so I went, and you were gone. Billy was gone, so it was just me on the air. And I went in, and I found the Thriller song, and I pulled up that riff, and I said, there it is. And George Wilson told me later, he says, of course, he says, it was Quincy Jones. He says, it was Quincy Jones' beat that he threw in there. So, of course, it was similar. And out of nowhere, the computer lit up, and we got a caller, and it was Bruce Howard. And he went on for another half an hour about his experience at the Sugar Shack, and at the very end of his half hour said, oh, by the way, he says, one of the cool things was there, well, you got to see people before they became stars. He says, I used to hang out with Jay Leno, and I was like, what? He says, yeah. He says, Jay Leno was in the club. And remember, you said before, you thought Jerry was on something to be talked. Jerry Maffeo was on something because Jay Leno was never in the club. So we dismissed it. We thought Jerry was making it up. And yet this guy says, no. He says, I hung out with Jay, and, you know, he was really a nobody at the time. And he said that Jay didn't actually get on stage. He was just loved the club because he was going to school at Emerson, and every chance he got, he came over and listened to the music. And then we got the real story from Jerry about the Brigham Sundays and all of that. And that wouldn't have happened. And then, of course, I called Jay. I sent a text to Jay Harvey, said, Jay, how do we get in touch with Jay Leno? And he said, here, call Helga. It's his assistant. He said, you know, send her an email. He gave me the email, and Jay is committed to do the film. I mean, how? How does that happen?
that's another wonder. Yeah. Maybe we could put the wonders of the
of course, you know, I've got an ex-girlfriend who I'm keeping apprised of the whole progress. And one day she said to me, Tom, this is going to be a great documentary, but forget it. She said, this is a great story. But the big story is the story behind the Sugar Shack, all the crazy things that are happening to make this thing happen. And I said, well, that'll be another book. When we start talking about the miracles of the Sugar Shack and why it was meant to be and how it came to be. You know, my thing, Rudy, is, you know, you can plan all the things you want in life. When somebody's got an expression, yeah, you want to make God laugh, have a plan, because he's got another plan. And when you think that Sugar Shack became what it was, and you never sat down and planned it to become what it was the Shirelles that changed the club from a white dating club to a predominantly black club, and your decision to go with black acts. I mean, all of that happened.
Yeah, well, the music at the barn with Wayne Cochran changed the direction. I was in an Al
Al Jolson. That's right. And that's what we're gonna put in the. Well, certainly when Billy and I continue to write, if, you know, he's right now the lights and the cameras and the action have hypnotized him. But when we get back to writing the play back to the Sugar Shack, we've got to incorporate all of those things. And I told Rick that we will go down to Florida to film Wayne. That's a must. That's one of the best stories.
Well, you can, how do I put this? Jackie Gleason. You got the tape of
Jackie
Gleason.
Yeah, that beautiful clip from Jackie Gleason, who said the same thing you did. I went to the barn the other night. I don't get impressed easily, but I went to the barn and saw this gentleman. I've never seen anything like this.
I was on the same page as Jackie Gleason. Can you beat this?
That's
nobody
right.
like was on the same page that Jackie Gleason was on. It was unbelievable.
Yep.
I saw the same thing. I saw this maniac just all over the place with a dynamite horn band screaming and up and down. I said, what the hell is this? Jerry Vale turned and Wayne Cochran turned the whole thing around.
Yeah, it's this has been so much fun. You know, I said to Rick Dumont the other night, I said, you got to understand something. I said, people, once in a while, money comes up. And I said, of course, we would love to monetize this and make money and see it all. I said, of course. I said, but I'll tell you something right now. If all of a sudden this ended tomorrow, I had a blast. I got to hang out with George Clinton.
Not for anything. We should try and get in the musical, that Jackie Gleason story.
Get that clip. It's only a 2 or 3 minute clip. Absolutely. We can put that right up on the screen.
Yeah, then we both agreed on this Miracle Wonder Man, Wayne Cochran.
Yep. That was, when we found that and you saw that, you said, oh, my God, Jackie Gleason said the exact same words I did.
Yeah, and then I says, this is original music? He says, no. He says, he's doing James Brown. He's doing Sam and Dave, Arthur Conley. He's doing all those.
Ticket.
Yeah, and then I says, wow. Then I had to check that out. And all the knowledge I learned from Jerry Vale, the agencies, the billboards, the music car, then I put that all into work, and I started watching the charts, and that's how I got into it.
Yeah, and I got to give a shout-out to Billy Porter again. Billy, are you listening to this? Are you listening to this part, Billy? This is the story. Well, this is the story, and that you should listen to yourself, too. This is the story. And the story and the music and everything that happened in the background is the other part of the story. And I said the big part of the story is that the harmony in the music and the harmony in the club, in spite of all the – hey, Rudy – let me just say this. With all the things that are going on right now, unfortunately, with race in this society right today, this movie has a message that is so pertinent to today and so important that people are going to look at it and go, look at this. They're talking about something that happened 50 years ago when there were big problems in this country, and here we are having problems again, and there was one place that there was no problems.
No problem. No problems. The Sugar Jack Cat, gangsters, pimps, whores, college kids, regular tourists. It was a mixture of everybody, and no problems for 10 years.
Right. Exactly. And the other thing, Rudy, is we've been doing these shows for a year. And all of this stuff is documented, Rudy. This is all put down.
Tom.
Yep.
I have a friend of mine that just dropped by with Sean. He wants to say hello, and I was telling him about the Sugar Shack and the club that we had 50 years ago, and y'all bringing it back to life. Sean,
yeah,
say hello.
Let's put Sean on here.
What's going on, Mr. Hayes?
Hey, Sean, how are you, buddy?
I'm pretty good. Yourself?
Good. How do you know Rudy?
I bring food to him.
Oh, great. Well, do you know about his fabulous club?
Yeah, every now and then I drop off stuff to him and we talk about music and stuff like that. He teaches me.
Yeah, well, you got the best teacher of all. Billy Porter, I just saw that you tried to call in, so I couldn't get to the phone to click it in time. So if you want to give a call back, do that. Sean, you're hanging out with a guy that is a legend with all of the greatest old-school music acts that ever existed, from the Stylistics and the James Brown and Stevie Wonder and Ray Charles and the Four Tops and two of the original band members of the Temptations, to Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes and Teddy Pendergast and Barry White and on and on and on, Gladys Knight and the Pips. This gentleman,
Sam,
Jackie Wilson, this gentleman that you are in the room with right now, hired all those people, brought them to his club, and those people didn't refer to that Sugar Shack as a club. They, every single one of them, called it home. Because when we went to the Sugar Shack, we went back to Rudy's home. It was Rudy's Sugar Shack. And so Rudy is the real deal.
Glad I get the chance to talk to him, because like I said, I love music. Like I said, everywhere from Etta James to Marvin.
We had Etta James.
Did you?
Yeah, she worked for us, Etta James.
Yep. Exactly.
My first concert I went to was in 1978. I got to see Bootsy Collins and Funkadelic.
Oh, they're going to interview.
That's hysterical
Bootsy.
Because it was George Clinton and the Funkadelics. We just got back from, about 2 months ago, 3 months ago, we were in Missoula, Montana, in George Clinton and the Funkadelics. We were in his dressing room.
Oh, wow.
Talking about his times with Rudy and the Sugar Shack.
Oh yeah.
And hopefully we're gonna be meeting Bootsy Collins in August at a local casino here, and get him on film.
That
you're talking
good,
to
yeah.
the man, my friend.
Oakland at the Coliseum.
Yeah.
Yep, I got to see the Brides of Funkenstein. Uncle Jam's Army, all those guys.
Wow. Well, we were treated
have
like royalty by George Clinton, the man himself.
Yeah, he just left. He brings me some of it. It's unbelievable the way. You can remember, in other words, you mention a name, everybody gets a credit, like George Clinton, Bootsy Collins. You can, not taking away anything from the stars that were around in those days, but people go crazy over these George Clintons and Bootsy Collins. You know what I'm saying?
Even today, you're right, they're still performing today. They got a brand new following.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, the people. And then you mentioned some of the acts that worked the Sugar Shack. They seem to go crazy because it's like there was a lot of memories there. I've been in a lot of clubs. You mentioned I've been in every showroom in Vegas. I've been at the Copacabana. I've been in Florida, the Mont Blanc.
Hey, we got a caller, Rudy. We got a caller. Hang on. This is Tom Hayes. We got a 781 number calling in. Welcome to the show. Who've we got?
Thank you. This is Woody.
Hey, Woody. Great.
Yeah.
You know, I've been. Ears must have been ringing the past 2 weeks, man, because I've been talking about you over and over and over and over and over. I've been talking to you on. I was on Blue Hill Ave in next to Simcoe by the bridge. There's a little company
kidding.
In there. I was Richard Phipps. I was mentioning your name to Richard and to Emily, his staff, Emily Guzman. And I was talking about Woody. I said, "Yeah, Woody was a singer with the. He was a band leader for the Lords and is now a minister. And what's the name of your church?"
It's called Faith Urban Assembly. And we're
Faith and Urban Assembly?
Yes, and we're up in Dorchester, right down the street from the courthouse.
In
Dorchester.
And,
a big white courthouse.
Yeah.
On Blue Hill Avenue.
Yeah.
That we're right one street, one block down. Melville Street. Very
Melville
nice
Street, and it's
very
Faith.
Nice area.
What is it again? Give us the proper name.
Faith Urban Assembly.
Great, great, great. Melville, fantastic. So, Rudy, you want to give a proper introduction to Woody?
I want to say that we're talking about the wonders of things. Woody is the wonder that saved the Sugar Shack.
Woody, I've been singing your praises for a week, and I keep repeating, and you know, let's call it, since you are a minister, let's call it the power of God. We have seen the power of God, and I keep trying to tell Rudy, relax. The power of God created the Sugar Shack, in my estimation. The power of God's kept the memory, and the power of God, we're preaching right now. We're testifying, Woody, we're testifying, and the power of God brought you here to the show today, and I've been telling, we've got a new cameraman, new director on board with the Shack, and I said, we have got to get over to Woody, and we've got to get you on film, my friend.
I would love to do that. I really
would.
Well,
we're going to do it. We're going to do it in the next couple of weeks, if you're available. Yeah, we want to. I would really like to come to the church and do it there, if that's okay with you.
Yes. I just want to talk to, we have co-ministers, you know, so it's more than just myself now. We have a senior minister. What I'll do is, because I'll be in church Sunday, but I'll call you Thursday, and we'll set this up.
Excellent, excellent. You know, I am writing the play, the call back to the Sugar Shack with Billy Porter. And what we're doing is we're tracing, you know, a brief outline of Rudy's story and intermingling
right.
it with the Sugar Shack stories. And one of the scenes, you are written into the play because I want the scene where you say to Rudy, like you did on the last podcasts we did, you said, Rudy, I loved you, and we had a great relationship, and you were like a father to me, and you gave us all these breaks, but whenever you started speaking Italian, I got out of the office.
That's right. They would laugh at me, but I got out. I said, I don't want them to even think I know a thing. Nothing. I said, where are you going? I said, leaving. Leaving. That's what I'm doing. I'm leaving. Because the same thing happened to my father. My father's playing Basin Street, all the Motown groups would come when they came to Boston back then. The Sugar Shack wasn't there, so they would go to Basin Street. And my father was sitting in a booth, and there were some men in the next booth, and they were speaking Italian. And they looked at him, and one of the guys said, oh, he's black, he doesn't speak Italian. And my father, when he got up to sing, he was singing an Italian song. He didn't know what it meant. He was singing it by rote, but their head swung around and said he speaks Italian. He heard everything we said. And my father had to explain to him, no, I didn't understand you. I just sang what I heard. I could have been singing about birds in the trees for all I know. But the people like it. So I've been down that road listening to my father. I said, well, they won't catch me like that. I'll be out of the building.
Woody.
Yes.
Woody, how many of the guys still living, Woody?
Okay, I talked with Sonny last week. I talked with Phil every week. Warren is passed, Fred is passed, but A.D., who sang the lead of of the song we put out, that did well, and Phil, who's up here with me, we're singing gospel, myself. So there's four of us.
Four.
Give
my best to all of them and thank them from my heart. Believe me, they really saved the Sugar Shack when I tell you.
Well, I'll tell you, you're right. But you made history doing that, Rudy, because you opened up the doors for other local groups to come in. Now, I will grant you that we made you some good money that whole time. Because you all were shocked. We broke y'all's record. Because so many people were there to see us, they couldn't believe we were at the shack.
Yeah, right.
And then we were identified with the shack. Hey, the Lords are at the shack. And we knew we would have a crowd.
Yeah.
And I thank Rudy for attending my wedding. And Marcia and I are still married. We've been together 50 years. And we're on a 47th year of being married.
God bless. Well, I think you got to write the book, Memories of the Sugar Shack.
Unbelievable.
Yes, and I'm telling you, I got a lot of stories. I know a lot of things.
We want to film them.
Okay.
We want to film them. Now, can you, what we'd like to do, Woody, ideally, is to get you and the four remaining members, if we could do that together, you know. We don't have to go to the church on Sunday. We want to, because we'd love to get the footage of you now singing gospel and you know, testifying and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But we can do two shoots. We can find another place to sit with you and the band and hear all the stories. You know, we sat with Tavares, the whole family, and it was one of the best shoots we ever did. And we'd like to do something similar, get the four of you together and just go around and around and get these great stories out.
Well, I'll be talking to Sonny today, and he's in Arizona.
Radio.
And AD, I just talked to, he's still out in L.A. But I think they would, we might be able to work something out. Also, yesterday I was just talking to Glenn Brooks, and I know Rudy knows him. He was, when we were the Lords and the People, Glenn was the bass player of the People. And he's still trying to get us together, you know, and so he would like to be there. And I have talked to all the sons, Fred Jr., I've talked to Warren Harrington's two sons, and they just want to meet, you know, and so we've been kind of working on that. But I talked to them by Facebook. So I will put that word out there. I'll talk to Sonny and I'll talk to AD and find out what we can do.
We want to have a party. We want to have a reunion party and get all of the stories and have some laughs. And, you know, today we can do anything with the computer. We may be able to actually Skype Rudy in at the same time. In fact, I'm familiar with the people at BNN TV. We may even have a chance to use the studio there for something like this and even Skype Rudy in.
Yes, that would be excellent. That really would be. Because Rudy made history here for all the guys that didn't have hits and so forth, but were just as good. And we were the first ones that he reached out and brought us in. And when he saw what we could do there, he realized that he didn't have to get all the top acts from someplace else. And that's when he really started making some money. And Rudy, you know it. Because you didn't have to pay them big dollars, you know, for the big, big acts. Because there's a lot of people with different followers that would come to the shack. But the shack is still alive in a lot of people's minds up here in Boston, believe me. And
well, you know, it's funny. I'm Rudy and I, the last you know, what we're just talking about exactly what just happened here. In the last month or so, I was just getting to the end of the show, and I thought we were getting to the end of the show today. And then, bingo, we get this beautiful call from you that just gives us so much to talk about. And we ended up with a guy by the name of Bruce Howard a few weeks ago who turned us on to Jay Leno. And Jay Leno has made a commitment, at least his secretary has made a commitment to do the film. So imagine that. You know, you're going to be sharing the screen with him. And then you call in today, and so we've had, just when we're about to sign off, so many times we get this big shot of energy. So and this is what keeps us going. And last week we started playing, we're going to put together an album, or albums, the playlist of the Sugar, the songbook, the Sugar Shack songbook.
Okay.
And what you're just saying is, here's the Shirelles, Eddie Jacobs, and the Mighty Soul Rockets. I'm looking for some of the Esquires. Now through Sunday, here it is. This was in the Boston Herald, 7/21/68. Boston, the Sugar Shack, Boston's authentic soul spot, 110 Boylston Street. Telephone
right.
number 426-00. It opened 8 to 2 a.m. Sunday matinee, 3 to 6. Presents opening Monday, July 22nd, our big summer attraction, Little Stevie Wonder, I Was Made the Lover. Now through Sunday, the Lords and the People. July 29th, the Esquires. August 5th, Cliff Noble, the Horse.
Wow. Isn't that something?
Yeah, huh?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it really is.
So,
because he opened up a lot of doors, and people would strive from the city, you know, if we can make it to the shack, we got a chance. That's what the, and it was, that's the hope that Rudy gave to a lot of guys that were just out here that would have been, instead of doing drugs, they were singing because they were striving to get to the shack. So he doesn't really know, Rudy, you really had an impact on this city and the black community. You really did.
You know, I'm glad you're saying that because Rudy and I fight about this from time to time, but he's getting better. He doesn't fight with me as much. When we sat with the OJs, we sat with Eddie LaVert and we sat with Walter Williams, or we sat, no matter who we sit with, that is exactly what people saying. That's why this story is as much about Rudy as it is about the shack, because there was love there.
That's right.
Love and respect.
That's right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm living proof of it. I know.
So yeah,
no,
well, he has to hear this because he keeps saying, I just want this to be about the club.
No, it's got to be about him, too, because he doesn't know the impact
it's
got to
be about
had.
Him.
Yes.
That's right. He's
absolutely.
The story.
I don't know if another man would have done what he did.
There you go. You know, seriously, Woody, I'm getting the chills, and this is what every time we do these, you know, there's Walter. I told Rudy, Walter Williams was sitting back in the couch, and he was going on telling us some great funny stories about the shack. And then he leaned forward. He got on the edge. I said, would you say something to Rudy? So look into the camera and say something to Rudy. And he got close to put his face maybe 6 inches from the screen.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I want to tell you something, Rudy. Because of the opportunities you gave us, because of the environment you put us in, where we could come in and experiment, we could work on new tunes, he says, and because of the close crowd interaction, he says, you enabled me to become the entertainer that I am today.
Mm.
And then he got real quiet, and
he
looked at the camera, and
he
said, I'm going to tell you something now.
Mm-hmm.
He says, because you were a few years older than us, and you treated us like family, you treated us like a father. He said, I'm going to tell you, Rudy Guarino, today I wouldn't be the man I am today without you.
That's right. That's right. He's absolutely correct. You know, he has touched many lives, and they talk about it on Facebook. And when first came out that it might be coming, people said, really? It was amazing. I said, wow, all these people, look at this. And I realized that he had really made an impact on the black community here. They had a place that they could go to that was known everywhere. He brought in the best acts, and you could always count on having a good time.
Yeah.
And you know, you didn't see big fights. You didn't see, I mean, it wasn't that kind of a place. You know, it just wasn't.
No.
You know, and for us, when we played Boston, we played the Shack, that meant we were home. From all the other clubs we played, that was home.
See, I don't mean to interrupt you, Tom. That's the other part of the Sugar Shack, the home.
That's
the
right.
Plate. No
That's
problem.
Right.
Never a fight. I didn't even know what the word racism meant. We never
I
even
know.
Heard.
I, you're right.
Everybody got along with everybody.
That's right.
It was unbelievable.
That's right.
You know, it does. It doesn't matter,
sugar.
Woody, whether
it's not like that anymore. No, now
no. Well, I said to him, we just got through saying before you called in. I said, Rudy, you know the backdrop. We're hitting this thing from many different angles, and one of the first things, in fact, one of the scenes that's come to my mind is putting this together, is those scenes in the Serengeti when they've got the watering hole and you've got the water buffalo and you've got the panther and you've got the lion and you've got the tiger and you've got the wildebeest and the zebra and the elephants and everybody's drinking from the water hole. It's like they said, okay, when we go back to the jungle, we're going to eat each other.
Yeah, but right now, we're just going to drink.
But right now, we're going to drink the water.
Yep.
And the gangs
nobody's
don't begin until we
fight
get outside.
Anybody.
That's right. Nobody's going to fight. And that was the Sugar Shack.
Yep.
With all the fighting and everything else went outside, when you went into the Sugar Shack, it was a holy place. It was a sacred place.
Yep.
You knew.
Yep. That's right. It was not going to be any problem at the shack.
Nope.
And
fact,
everybody
Woody, because
knew
I grew
why,
up in
don't we, Rudy?
Who we talk? Oh, when I was talking to Herb of Peaches and Herb, with the new director we have, Rick DeMont, and he said, and Herb said, "You got to understand, you didn't mess around because it was Rudy's place." And he said,
right.
"Rudy had two families, and if you know
that's
what
right.
I mean,
yep.
He had us his family, then he had his other family."
Yep.
And because there was two families, there was never a problem.
That's right.
It was
absolutely
Rudy's way.
A fact.
It would not be tolerated.
That's right. That's right. He had the right man at the door, Jerry. Jerry knew who was good
Sticker
and who
Jerry.
Was not. Jerry
That's
McPhair.
Right.
And he
That's
would
right.
I watched him turn people away, you know,
yep.
because he knew they were trouble.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's great. Hey, Rudy,
hey,
are you having a good time today? Rudy, are you having a good time today?
I'm 87 years old. If this keeps going on, I'm going to live to another 100 years.
Well, that's good. You know, the Bible says that you got another 40 coming.
That's from the preacher man. You know, it's,
oh, my goodness.
Well, hey, Woody, you know, one of the things we're finding out, we want to put a little slice on this story, is a lot of the pimps became preachers.
You know something? A lot of them did. There were some of them that did, yes. You know, that's really is the truth. Bishop Smith, who had one of the biggest churches in Boston, he used to sing... he never made the shack, but he was in one of the biggest groups in Boston, and we used to look at them. And he went on to be one of the biggest bishops in the city.
Wow.
Had a lot of clout and everything. And because he knew both sides of the world, if you know what I'm saying.
Yep, of course.
You know, so you couldn't run nothing
the truth.
By him. And that's how it was for me. You know, it wasn't too much you could run by me that I didn't know. You know, but they just assumed, because I was a minister, that I don't know nothing. If they only knew. Sometimes I would listen to them, and I'd say, you know, they don't have a clue what I know. You know, but that's
exactly.
All right. I'm going to keep it that way.
Well, you know, I say that to people. My bringing up, my being brought up in Roxbury, when I got out into the corporate world and people would put stunts on me, I would just look at, I would be shocked and amazed. I said, how can you possibly do that? You have no idea what I'm capable of. You have no idea what I learned in Roxbury.
That's right.
You know.
Because if you walked into Barry, you have something. You could man up.
And I said, well, I was like that zebra on the Serengeti. I said, when that cheetah was coming, I said,
yeah.
I was a meal. I had that white skin that stood out. I said, I was an easy mark, so I had to run like that zebra. It is funny. I got to tell a quick story. I live here on the beach now in South Boston, and last year, there's no dogs allowed on the beach in the summertime, and you're always supposed to have a dog on a leash. Well, this couple walks by. Dog is not on a leash. And he goes after this poor Latino family with three little girls. And he terrifies the three little girls. And the whole beach is sitting there. Nobody said anything. And I said, hey. I said, first of all, I said, that dog should be on a leash. You shouldn't be on the beach. Get him away from those little girls. They're petrified of him. And the guy came up, and he was let me call him a Southie Rat. And he comes up to me, and he says to me, he's in his 20s, and I'm 69, and I have one leg, and I'm on my crutches, and I'm in my bathing suit. And he charges me. So I stood up on my crutches. So he stood up on my crutches. I have my clutches to let him know that he was going. If he came close, it would be bad. So he says to me, "Where did you grow up?" He says, "I'm from Southeast. My name is Billy. I forget his last name, McCluskey, whatever." And he said, "Where did you grow up?" He says, "You didn't grow up around here." I said, "You know something, Billy?" I said, "You're absolutely right." I says, "I grew up 2 miles from here. I grew up in Roxbury. And let me tell you something, Billy. Right now, you just made a bad move." I says, "You just told me who you were." I says, that was one cardinal rule in Roxbury. You never let anybody know where you were or what your name was.
That's right.
I says, because now, Billy, I can find you. And he looked at me, turned around, and walked away. I said, see, that's the difference between Roxbury and Southie. You don't do stupid things like that, Billy.
That's right. My goodness.
This is just, you heard how excited I was when you called. I mean, this is, talk about, I really believe in that this is a divine appointment. And I mean that with all the sincerity, no disrespect to anybody's concept of God. But this is a divine, I believe that the Sugar Shack was a divine appointment. The Sugar Shack happened for a reason that it transformed. If there was any experience in Boston at the time with all of that hate and problems and everything else, there was one place that was a church.
Which you could go. That's right.
There was a temple.
And it didn't matter whether you were black or white.
Exactly.
You know, at the shack, it was colorless. You know, everybody was colorblind.
Yes, exactly.
That's the way it
was. That's the word. That's a beautiful word, colorblind. When you went in, it all changed. You know, I can remember sitting at the tables, and, you know, my wife at the time, she grew up on Dudley Street, and, you know, I was on Warren Street, and, you know, we knew what it was like, you know, to deal with things in the city every day in the Berry. And then we went in there, and people, you know, beside us, these black girls would talk to us and say, "Hey, how you doing, honey? We saw you last week. You know, come on, we're going to teach you how to dance." Because we saw you dance, and you need to learn how to dance. And we just always, we developed great friendships, and it was the only, when I tell people about the shack, I said, the only problem with the shack is it was from when you parked the car till you got there, you were nervous. You went as fast as you could till you got to the door. I said, once you got to the door.
That's true.
I said, because anything could have happened, either whether you were black or white. Anything could have happened in that part of town. But
once
you got in there, that was the demilitarized zone.
That's right.
And the irony was, there was more firepower in that club than any place
in
the
city. That's right. You are so right. I'm going to tell you this one thing, and I know you got to go, and I got to go. But Rudy sent us to Texas, to Dallas. And we met some of the people that were there and so forth. And one, this blonde-headed guy, he told me, you know, he said, I'm a hitman. And then I found out he wasn't playing with me. He was real. And when we got back to the Sugar Shack, who do I see? Blondie. Well, that was yesterday. Oh, my God. That's that same guy from Texas. Oh, Lord. Well, I'm glad I didn't do nothing wrong, because you never know.
Woody, I'm so happy you called in. Literally, I've been shouting your name loud and clear, telling everybody we got to get together and do this shoot. You're an important part of the story. And you know, the great words that you said today, you know, are just exactly what we wanted to hear, and Rudy needs to hear it. Rudy has to.
Yeah, he does.
Rudy
he
told
does.
Me that since this has started, we've taken, what, 20 years off your life, Rudy?
Yeah. you added about 20 years, not taking it
yeah.
off.
Yeah. Yeah. These are exciting
sure.
times. You know, Rudy's daughter, one of the stories we're telling earlier today is that Rudy's daughter, Susanna, who is coming into her own right now, we've had so much fun with this whole thing and like the laughs we had. I don't know if you've ever heard the George Clinton podcast, but you should. If you know how to get in, and I can send you a link to it, I will. You got to listen to George. He came in like a lion, right, Rudy?
Yeah. Rudy asked me, let me tell you this. I saw them in Philadelphia at the Uptown Theater. We were there, too. When I came back to Boston, I showed Rudy the picture of them. They had a big hit out called I Want to Testify. And Rudy brought them in. But when they got there, they weren't. I remember Rudy took the picture. He called me into the office. He said, you see this picture? This is the picture you showed me. You told me these guys were good. What is that out there? Because they had gotten to the funkadelic parliament thing, which I didn't know about. Now, they scared half the people in the club just entertaining. But Rudy was smart enough to put them in the cave. And
right.
all those college kids packed the cave out to see the crazy parliament. You know, because they would do that, hey, whatever, you know, but P-Funk was born. Because I knew George very well.
Amazing.
And he was Mr. P-Funk. But I just never forget, Rudy showed me the picture, and he said, that's not what's out there. And there was nothing I could say. It went in another direction. I didn't know. But
well,
they got famous.
Well, you just wrote yourself. You just wrote yourself. You seriously, when Billy Porter and I sat down, we said, we've got to make Woody a main character. One of the not the main character, but he's going to be a running character throughout the play because you were the house band and you had privy to all of this stuff. And because of your involvement in that scene with George,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you just make this thing all the more hysterical. I'm a comedian.
Yes.
I understand the rich content here. This is
mm-hmm.
hysterical stuff. And the fact that Rudy never minded, he yells at George and he calls the agent, but then he calls you. And this ain't what you showed me. That's not what's out there.
And he got the, I told him about the whispers. He brought the whispers in. And the whispers were excellent, you know.
Yeah. I don't mean to interrupt. Tell him what the agent says about the funkadelics.
Rudy calls the agent and says, this ain't what you showed me. This ain't what I bought. He says, I ain't putting them on. And the agent says, if you don't put them on, I'm coming up in there and going to burn your fucking club down.
Hope you get to say.
And Rudy said, come up here now. If you're going to do it, come on up. We're ready for you.
That sounds like Rudy. Really. Really, really does.
All because, over the funkadelics.
Yes, because that's what he called
so
me.
Much
now.
Fun.
He said, because I vouched for them. I said, yeah, I saw them, you know. And he said, look at this picture. Now tell me who that is out there. I couldn't even say anything because I didn't get it my own self. I was looking for the sparkly suits and the hair being straight and so forth. All that was over with. I think one night George came out in diapers. If I got it right.
I was there. I saw
it. Okay.
My wife and I were horrified.
Yeah.
This is not the Shylights. This is not the Delphonics.
That's right.
What happened to Harold Melvin? This is not that group.
Hey, Tom, you got to put that in the play, Tom.
Yeah, of course it's going to be in the play, and we're going to just – Woody just wrote two or three more lines here.
You got to put You got to put the George Clinton story in there.
Rudy, it's going to be 20 minutes of the play, literally 20 minutes of people dying. It's one of the most important parts. And the other important part is Woody saying to you every time, they're going to running gag throughout the play, is every time you're always in the, going in and out of the office, Woody, and every time Rudy starts speaking Italian, you run.
That's right.
And it's going to build. But that story about your dad saying, hey, I don't speak Italian, and then getting up and singing an Italian song.
Right.
That's a scene out of Goodfellas, man.
Yeah. You know, because he said they all turned around and looked at him. What? And that's what the first thing he had to do when he got off the stage was go right over to them and let him understand that he didn't understand anything he was singing. He just hoped it sounded good. And he was pronouncing the words correctly. That was it.
Hey, Rudy, you having fun yet?
Yeah, I tell you, you guys are going to add on another 20, 30 years on my life. I'm going to wait for everything to just...
Well, you know,
yeah.
Woody, we went over the story of how I've been wanting to do this for 40 years, and then one day I got a call from Ralph Peace saying, hey, I thought you were going to do a podcast, and because of my involvement, and one thing led to the other, all the little steps along the way, we connected with Rudy, and it's been a year of these beautiful podcasts, which I was just about to tell Rudy before, when just as you called in, I said, these are preserved forever, and we can even put these into transcript. This is a book in itself right here, just what's been going on for a year. And your story is that story about Ohio, one of the coolest stories I've ever heard, you know, escaping from Ohio. You know, we told Eddie LeVert and we told Walter Williams your story about how their wives used to come and watch you guys.
That's right, because Eddie came up there. He said, I know you don't know who I am. I said, I know who you are, Eddie LeVert. I said, you used to play ODs in Cambridge. I said, there used to be five of you. And he said, wow, you used to. I said, well, you couldn't play any place else because he couldn't play the check back then. And,
right.
You know, I mean, that's the way it was for all of us. That's why I said Rudy really doesn't know the impact that he really made because us along with Tavares and Harold Melvin, all of us have played the same circuit. We all knew each other, but we never could reach that Shaq status. And when we broke through, when Rudy called and we got in there, all of Boston came out.
Yeah.
Because
looking at another name that was a local name, Ralph Graham, right?
Yes, Ralph sang. I don't know if Ralph was still singing. I know I saw him a few years back because he was at Ken's Pub for 5 years. And I'm telling you, he still got it.
Wow.
He still got it.
Wow.
That's all I can say.
Remember that name, Rudy?
Yeah, that rings a bell.
Yep.
And, I remember him. He was a local guy.
Yeah. It came out of Atlantic Street Project, just like me.
Yeah. Which project?
Lenox Street.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I know it.
Yeah, that was, besides that, then they built over there on Ruggles Street, and I remember as a kid we moved over there.
Yep.
Once
my mother grew up on Ruggles Street.
Wow, no kidding. My goodness gracious. See, it's a small world.
It's a small, beautiful world.
This is
happening at this time in our lives. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
You are going to see. You are a big part. Woody, you are a big part of this film. We need you. You're going to be up there with all of the greats because you are great. And it's going to be a encapsulation of this great time, great guy, great music. Once we put this in, then it's there forever. This documentary will be our testament to one of the greatest happenings ever in the city of Boston, ever in the world.
That's right.
So,
absolutely.
I've got your number now. I'm going to be calling you in the next couple of weeks. And let's put this together. Let's do it right. You know, I'd love to come to the church and get footage of the church and hear all of these great stories for the world. And you got to understand, we're going to get an Oscar. We're shooting for the Oscar. We got names like Frankie Valli. We got George Clinton. We, you know, we're going to get Jay Leno. We got we got some surprise guests from the other side that we're going to bring into this. We're going to build a dramatic, fabulous, touching, moving, funny story.
Wow, it's going to be great.
I don't mean to interrupt, Tom. The way the country is going today with all the horrors and shootings and terrors, they need a sugar shack to calm everybody down and bring everybody
together.
Well,
that's going to be our message.
He's right.
That, Rudy, you're absolutely
right.
That's our message. Is that that opening scenes were the race riots in Roxbury over 50 years ago, and then we contrasted. There's Skippy White saying the one place you could go, and God bless Skippy, he stayed open during all the riots.
Yeah.
He was a cat who lived it.
That's right.
You know, and he's got a story to tell.
Yeah, because he helped push our record. You know, we sold out.
That's right.
And the irony was, the hit was the other side, but they played the wrong side, and everyone loved it. And so in Boston, they bought it for one side, where the rest of the world was listening to the other side.
And a lot of times he made the other side a hit by playing it.
That's right. That's right.
Right.
You know, you're absolutely right.
Well,
but it's been great talking
again,
to you.
Again, I can't thank you enough for calling in. Every week we get a surprise. You know, right, Rudy? Don't we get a surprise every week?
We sure do.
Yeah, it's good hearing Rudy's voice. You know
how did you,
what,
did you just see that on Facebook that we were on the air?
Someone called me. And they said,
great,
you know that they're saying that the Sugar Shack is going to have a reunion? And I said, and that's what made me call. Because they were talking about this reunion. And I had to wait. I have to find out if this is real. So when I called you the first
time,
he said what the process was going to be. You know, I understand, but it got us talking, the guys in the group and the guys that were in the people and so forth. So that was the impetus for us getting back together, just talking on the phone and saying we were going to get together sometime this summer before the summer's out, and they were going to come up from wherever they were and see what we could do. And they all understood that it was going to have to be gospel, and they said no problem, and so we just went from there. But I look forward to doing something.
We want to get involved in any reunion there is, you know?
Yes, yes. Well, that's what they were saying. And there's a lot of people that would love to see that. And it was just so funny because just last week someone posted Facebook, what happened to the reunion. And then someone wrote back and said, it's still happening, but remember, he has to do Vegas first, and it's all about the money. You have things to get right and so forth. And they were trying to help that person hold on to that dream, you know, because for them, it was going back to the good old days.
Yep.
When I talked to my brother, you know, he says, the good days, the days of the Sugar Shack, that's what I remember the best.
Right, right.
Because that's how it was. You know, because they were watching Italians get along with blacks, and it was no problems.
That's right. You know, and we were kids. My wife and I were just kids. We were in our early 20s, and we were coming out of Roxbury to hear the music that we heard on the streets and on the radio and to see it live. And it was just, you know, it was like a dream come true for us. In fact, I think I said the story to you. I told everybody we're in Rome. I went to Rome before we got married, and I went over for the whole summer. I was traveling through Europe, and I brought my fiance, my wife, over, and we spent a week in Rome and Florence and Venice, saw all of the wonders of the world, and I said to her the last night she was going home, I'll never forget, a little Italian restaurant under all these grape leaves, and I said, okay, of all the places we've seen, the places we've been, I want you to think worldwide, what is the coolest, most different place in the world? I didn't get the words out of my mouth. She looked at me, the Sugar Shack. The Sugar Shack's the most different place in the world. There's no place like the most unique
the unique, the clothes, the music, the people,
everything.
The excitement.
That's right. You know, when
unique.
You saw the pimp spy, you look over, and then you saw, all you saw was flash.
Oh, well, listen, Rudy, we filled up, last week we did an hour, just Rudy and I, and he was surprised. Rudy,
mm-hmm.
today we've done an hour and a half.
Oh, we got to save some time for next week.
That's right.
Exactly.
Well,
Rudy,
I'm going
to
hear from you, and I'll get in touch with the other guys and let them know about our conversation.
Woody, it's so, again, this is the second miracle this week. Poor George Wilson had to, because of some other personal commitments, had to pull out
mm-hmm.
of the filming. He's done most of the filming to date.
Uh-huh.
And I had the last couple of shoots, I had to hire somebody else, a fellow by the name of Rick Dumont, who's a talented, talented guy. And he just lit up when he saw all of this happening and said, geez, I want to get him. The thing that mm-hmm. happened was... I said, okay, let's have a meeting, and we were supposed to meet 1 o'clock on Tuesday. 12:30, George called in and said, you know, guys, I can't continue. And I said, how does a timing like that happen? You know, I mean, just a smooth, seamless transformation to the next level. And so we're all excited with new energy to put this all together.
Yes, looking forward to it.
All right, Woody, thanks so much.
Okay.
Rudy, anything you want to say before Woody takes off?
I want to say it's a pleasure talking to Woody, and he'll always remain in my memories, Sugar Shack or no Sugar Shack.
Oh, God
right
bless
on.
You for that. God bless you for that.
All
I
right.
appreciate that. All
well,
right.
Let's continue the saga of the Sugar Shack.
Yes. yes.
Sugar
many
Shack.
More stories. I'll be talking to you.
All right, thanks so much.
Okay.
Bless you, man.
God bless.
All right.
Okay.
Well, Rudy, there we go.
Sugar Shack record, Tom.
Yeah, well, I'm going to we only got 2 minutes before it goes off the air here, so I'm going to play the Sugar Shack song again, and we can say goodbye to everybody, and next week come back and we're going to have some great music. Okay, Rudy?
Okay, bye-bye. Talk to you
all
later.
All right, here we go.
There's a crazy little shack beyond the tracks. And everybody calls it the Sugar Shack. Well, it's just a coffee house. Made out of wood, espresso coffee tastes mighty good. That's not the reason why I've got to get back up to that Sugar Shack. Oh, baby, to that Sugar Shack. And there's this cute little girl, she's a working there. Black leotards and her feet are bare. I'm gonna drink a lot of coffee, spend a little cash, make that girl love me when I put on some trash. You can understand why I've gotta get back up to that Sugar Shack. Oh, baby, to that Sugar Shack. Yeah, honey, to that Sugar Shack. Oh, yes, to that Sugar Shack.
Well, there we go, Rudy.
Okay.
Hey, we'll see you next week. Thanks, everybody,
right.
for tuning in. It was a great show.
Yeah, thank you again, and let's keep the buzz going.
You got it, Rudy. So much fun. All right, see you next week.
All right.
All right, bye-bye.